Evening, everyone. The Labor, Industry, Veterans and Military Affairs, Finance and Policy Committee will come to order. I would like to announce that this meeting will take place in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This meeting may be viewed on Public Information TV, which is available on the House website. As is custom with this committee, please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we get started, Committee Legislative Assistant Grace Doyle will take the role. Ms. Doyle.
Thank you. Chair Eklund.
Present.
Vice Chair Zhang.
Present.
Representative Detmer.
Detmer present.
Representative McDonald. Representative Berg.
Present.
Representative Bliss.
Present.
Representative Edelson.
Present.
Representative Frederick.
Present.
Representative Greenman.
Present.
Representative Nelson.
Present.
Representative Poston. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh present.
Representative Sundin.
Sundin present.
Representative McDonald. Representative Poston.
Present.
We do have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Doyle. The quorum is present. Next on the agenda is approval of minutes from January 27th, 2021. Every member should have received a copy of today's minutes in their inbox. I'm seeking a motion for approval of the minutes.
Chair Eklund.
Representative Sundin moves the minutes. Any comments or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption of the minutes say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The minutes are adopted. Members, before we get started on the agenda today, I want to make a couple comments about conversation in this committee and the topics that will come before us. We have approximately 3 hours of committee time scheduled per week. We can have conversations that are part of the purview of this committee, or we can go off on our own editorial comments about how things should be done. If that's the case, then we will be scheduling time on Fridays and evenings to make sure that we do get the budget that has to come out of this committee forward, and then whatever other bills may come. So with that, next item on the agenda is House File 7 from Representative Olson. I will move that House File 7 be laid over for further consideration. Before we get in the bill, we have many testifiers lined up to speak today, and each will have 3 minutes to give their testimony. If testifiers could please stay until the end, if they are available, we will hold off on questions until we've gone through all the testimony we have. Representative Olson, welcome to the committee. You may present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Well, I'm excited to be here to present House File 7, which is the Earned Sick and Safe Time legislation. And I just want to acknowledge, I know a lot of hard work has gone into this bill over time, and I am just grateful to be here with the number of you that I see will be testifying that have put a lot of hard work into this, as well as previous representatives who've done a lot of work on this. So glad to be in front of this committee. So I'll just start by saying that Minnesotans care for one another, and we want a Minnesota to be a caring state where all of our families can be healthy and safe. So I'm bringing this bill up today because we all know that everyone gets sick, and the coronavirus outbreak is one more reminder, an extreme one, that when people get sick, they should be able to stay home, not just for their own health or the health of a loved one, but for the health of all of us. This bill would ensure Minnesota is a state where, regardless of the color of your skin, your income, or where you work, you can stay home to snuggle with a sick child, where you can go to the doctor before your illness goes from bad to worse, where you can take time to recover from an illness or seek support in the wake of sexual assault without worrying about missing bills or losing your job. Unfortunately, for too many, especially those we've called essential, during this pandemic, this isn't the Minnesota they experience. An estimated 36% of working people, that's 932,000 Minnesotans, don't have any paid sick and safe time. This means that in a state with the second most Fortune 500 companies per capita, more than a third of the working people in our state face a terrible choice between caring for themselves or a loved one in need and the loss of wages or even employment, because in many circumstances, it's actually still legal for workers to be fired for needing to take time off to care for themselves or their loved one. This is a common sense proposal that has proven effective in numerous states and localities across the country. It also benefits employers too, as it improves recruitment and retention. It lowers employer healthcare costs through better use of preventative care and lower presenteeism or coming to work sick, all of which means higher productivity, fewer workplace injuries, and a healthier Minnesota. Moreover, this bill would help small businesses hit hardest by COVID compete with big box stores who have reaped record profits since the pandemic began. And this is also a public health issue. Since many of the employees least likely to have paid sick time work in jobs such as food service, where choosing to come in and work means they're on the same size of that sneeze guard as your food is, all because they need that paycheck and can have real life health implications for the general public. Ultimately, House File 7 is about becoming the kind of caring state that I think we all want Minnesota to be. As for the specific bill before us, it tracks closely with what those municipal sick and safe time ordinances that have already been passed in my own city of Duluth, plus Minneapolis and St. Paul, as well as those enacted in over a dozen other states. So the bill in front of us, Article 1, Section 1, changes the statutory reference from the existing law governing sick and safe time to the statute proposed in this bill, ensuring that employees can return to their same position at the conclusion of their leave. Section 2 contains the definitions. Of note, all employees except independent contractors working at least 80 hours in Minnesota for a single employer would earn sick and safe time to care for themselves or loved ones in circumstances detailed in Subdivision 1 of Section 4. Section 3 details the minimum standard for accrual of earned sick and safe time, which is 1 hour earned for every 30 hours worked, up to 48 per year and up to 80 at any given time, which can be thought of as the bank of accrued unused sick and safe time. Employees begin earning sick and safe time at the start of employment, but employers are allowed to require the employees to wait up to 90 days before they can start using their earned sick and safe time. Section 4, Subdivision 1, details the allowed uses of earned sick and safe time, including cared for a loved one due to physical or mental health needs, domestic abuse, sexual assault, or stalking, or for a school or business closure due to weather or public emergency or quarantine. Subdivisions 2 through 5 set other conditions, including notice requirements, documentation, prohibiting the need to find a replacement, and the increments of time that can be used. Section 4, Subdivision 6 prohibits retaliation against employees who request or use their earned sick and safe time, while Subdivision 7 through 9 protect the employee's position and benefits while using their earned sick and safe time. Subdivision 10 details employee notice of their rights to earn sick and safe time, and Subdivision 11 allows employees to access how much earned sick and safe time they have available. Subdivisions 12 and 13 focus on employer records and the confidentiality of those records, while allowing an employee to access their own records and prohibiting discrimination based on the information contained in the records. Section 5, Subdivision 1 makes clear that these requirements are a floor, that other paid time off policies can meet these requirements and that the construction industry employers can choose to meet these requirements by paying the prevailing wage, whether on a public or private project, because the statute dealing how the prevailing wage is calculated in the construction industry specifically includes paid time off for injury or illness, disability insurance, and vacation time. Subdivision 2 and 3 deal with an employee when an employee is transferred or terminated or the company changes hands and requires employees to be allowed to keep their earned sick and safe time unless the separation from employment is more than 180 days. Section 6 repeals the existing statute governing sick and safe time, and Section 7 is the effective date, which is 180 days following the enactment. Article 2 of the bill creates the enforcement mechanisms to the Department of Labor and Industry will need to ensure that workers and employers are protected under this bill, which are very similar to the authority that DALI already has to enforce other wage and hour violations, including civil penalties for refusal to submit required records in Section 1, applying existing compliance order authority to sick and safe time in Section 2, escalating penalties for repeated violations in Section 3, and rulemaking authority, private right of action, allowance for outreach grants, an annual report, and joint liability for those who hire subcontractors known to have violated sick time laws in Section 4. And finally, Article 3 contains the appropriation, the main components of which are education and outreach staff at DALI to develop trainings and materials to ensure that employers, employees, and HR companies are ready to start the sick and safe time, investigators and administrators support at DALI, replacement staff time for workers in 24/7 facilities related to increased sick and safe time, one-time rulemaking costs, and some modest additional revenue. And with that, I think I have walked through the bill, and I know we have a number of testifiers and would like to make sure that we have time for those. And we also received, I believe, some written testimony for folks who weren't able to join us, and we'd just like to point members in that direction, as well as a sign-on letter with, I believe, at least 25 different organizations in support. So with that, Mr. Chair, I will be done with my bill presentation.
Thank you, Representative Olson. We do have a number of testifiers. I want to remind them we have 3 minutes apiece on testimony. First up is Danny Schwartzman, Common Roots Cafe, owner of Common Roots Cafe. Mr. Schwartzman, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi, thank you. I'm Danny Schwartzman. I own Common Roots Cafe in Minneapolis. It's also a catering company. And I'm the co-chair of the Main Street Alliance of Minnesota, which is a state chapter of a national organization with members who are business owners across the state who are supportive of policies that are good for employees and community as a whole, which this certainly is one that we strongly support. And I'm here as a business owner in Minneapolis. I have experience with Minneapolis's enforcement of the Earned Sick and Safe Time Ordinance, and was involved in that process as well at the city level. And for us, this is the kind of policy that is good for workers and good for community, and it's also good for the businesses as well. It helps raise the basic floor of working conditions, just like minimum wage. We all expect that everyone gets paid a fair wage when they go to work. We should expect that people don't feel like they have to go to work sick because they can't afford to, or because they might get fired because they aren't able to perform the basic duties of their job if they don't come to work sick. Obviously, that's not allowed. But we know it happens. It happens too often. And when we see a community-wide enforcement of a basic floor that gives us things like the ability to take a little bit of time off because you're sick and get paid for it, we see more people use that. So like on our staff, they know that they can take time off because they're sick. They don't come to work sick. They have that expectation that it's a standard that they have. And because they can take the time they need when they're sick, they don't come to work sick. And during a pandemic, that's all, it's very, very clear that we don't want anyone coming to work sick. It's bad for everyone. We want people to be able to attend work and perform their duties and not get anyone else sick and go home. And when you have a policy like this, it makes a huge difference. We also see, for me personally as a restaurant owner, I've always had earned sick and safe time, effectively. I've had PTO since we opened. But many of our employees work at places, have other jobs. Now those other jobs, they don't have those kinds of benefits. And they're not accustomed to being able to have the time they need to take care of a loved one or to take care of themselves when they have a sickness. So we've had to remind them repeatedly and push them to not come to work. Now that we have a citywide ordinance, we see people getting used to the fact that, oh, this is a benefit that we should have and that we do have, and they don't even think about it. So in all kinds of different industries across, we really want to see the floor rise and to see these kinds of basic benefits entrenched. And I think it's good for reducing turnover. It's good for businesses, and it's certainly good for our communities and our employees who really deserve the time they need to take care of their loved ones and to have the time to get better and to not spread illnesses in our community, which is, of course, what is on everyone's mind right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schwartzman. And I ask you to stick around. Members, if you have questions of the specific testifiers, remember to jot their names down quick if you could. If you can stick around, Mrs. Schwartzman, until we're done, if there's any questions. Next up, we have Adeline Wright, Adeline Incorporated, President, Rainbow Collaborative Incorporated. Ms. Wright, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi, my name is Adeline Wright, and yes, I'm the president of both Adeline Inc. and Rainbow Collaborative Inc. here in Duluth, Minnesota. Thank you so much for inviting me here today to share my support for statewide Earn Sick and Safe Time. I opened my first salon in 2001 at the age of 24, and it has been a commitment of mine to be an employer who treats my workforce with dignity and equality. From an early age, I was inspired by the character of Fezziwig from Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. And in the story, Fezziwig's generous and joyful business practices inspired trust, loyalty, and respect. I was also inspired by the family-owned businesses in my neighborhood who took great pride in providing solid benefits for their employees, many of whom still are working for these companies today. Adopting similar principles in my own business has made it possible not just to survive the 2008 recession and now the COVID-19 pandemic, but also to thrive within. Offering generous paid sick days, paid vacation time, paid time off for mental health needs, and or to care for a family member who is sick, created a culture of respect and trust that has permeated my business, contributing both to the stability and growth. That being said, not all business owners will choose this path of generosity and care. Even though all workers deserve these basic labor standards, regardless of how generous or not their employer is going to be or what city they happen to work in. June of this year will mark my 20th year in business, and I have not seen any negative financial impact to my bottom line for providing ample sick and safe time. And this is not just my experience. In a 2011 study of San Francisco employers, more than 89% did not report negative effects on profit due to the city's 2007 sick time law. In fact, as I look around now, almost a year into the pandemic, the businesses in Duluth who supported passing our local Earn Sick and Safe Time ordinance are the very same businesses that are now prospering through the pandemic. They have consistently stood by their workers, and because of this, their employees feel valued and are invested in the health and well-being of these businesses. And I believe in the connection there. To stay financially secure, employers rely on great, healthy employees working to their full potential. Yet some workplaces force employees to work even while the workers are sick. Forcing people to work while they are still sick leads to diminished productivity and to the spread of infection, as we're all seeing now. It also sends a message to the worker that they are a machine and not, in fact, human beings with lives and inherent worth. I believe that spreading illness to the public is much more costly to a business than offering paid sick time. In a 2013 CDC study, 49% of food workers who had worked at least one shift while either vomiting or having diarrhea said that knowing they would not be paid if they stayed home influenced their decision to come to work while still symptomatic. Some employers already provide this earned paid sick time. However, 41 million workers in the U.S. still lack access to these benefits. We cannot rely on the goodness or generosity of individual employers because these values vary widely with both temperament and location. Only a strong public policy can secure these benefits for every employee. And again, statistically, we know that most businesses that already offer paid sick time and earn sick and safe time do well not only ethically, but also financially. Earn sick and safe time policies benefit both employees and the business's bottom line. The cities and states that have moved in the direction of providing earn sick and safe time are doing the right thing. However, access to sick time should not just depend on the city that you live within our state. And I strongly support Minnesota passing earn sick and safe time regulations statewide to help all Minnesotans thrive. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wright. Next up is Eric Gort, and if I butcher these names, folks, I apologize, from Northern Water Smokehouse, and he is the owner. Mr. Gort, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Garrett, you are muted.
Can you hear me now? Okay. My name is Eric Gert. I own Northern Water Smokehouse in Duluth, and my wife and I have owned Northern Waters for the past 22 years. We're a small food production company specializing in smoked fish, deli meats, and sandwiches served in a deli-style setting. I'm testifying today in support of House File 7, Minnesota Safe and Sick Time. We currently have 52 employees and have been providing safe and sick time voluntarily for the past 9 years. This is something we initiated for the safety of our employees and customers and the stability of our business. Our policy is very similar to what is being proposed in this bill. Compared to other business sectors, it is rare that employees in the hospitality sector have access to safe and sick time, which is totally ironic to me because they interact with the public in ways and in spaces that put both them and others at risk. Food-based businesses have to navigate a myriad of safety regulations to guarantee their food is safe to eat, but as a state, we have failed to safeguard the very people that make and serve this food, which is counterproductive to food safety goals. Someone without sick leave may likely come to work when they are sick because they can't afford to stay home. This puts their coworkers and customers at risk. This is an important tool in our toolbox for preventing foodborne and other illnesses amongst ourselves and our customers. From a business standpoint, over the years, this benefit has mitigated illness outbreaks, and I feel has kept our customers healthier and our business more stable. This has been true even though most of our employees have not used their annual maximum benefit. Earned safe and sick time has proven especially beneficial during this pandemic, which we haven't incurred any COVID-19 related business shutdowns, not even one day. If we didn't have this benefit, our employees might be tempted to come to work ill, not because they want to put anybody at risk, but like most folks, they live paycheck to paycheck and might think twice about calling in sick if they're going to lose a pay period. In our experience, this benefit has also been an effective recruitment and retention tool. We have an extremely high retention rate for any business, but particularly for the hospitality industry. Hospitality and tourism is an important part of our economy. We need to retain and care for its workers. The administration of this benefit is also very easy. Any HR or accounting software is able to manage the task. I've had many customers over the years that have thanked us for providing these benefits and have expressed their willingness to pay a little bit more for food in order to ensure that they and our customers, and our employees, are healthy and safe. Our employees have also used the safe time portion of the benefit in situations where they've had domestic emergencies related to safety, and it was important for them not to be able to lose time, pay, in order to attend to these emergencies. Sickness, emergencies, and unsafe situations happen to everyone, no matter where they work, and they shouldn't be penalized for this. In closing, as a small 50-employee business, we've been able to support and fund this benefit for 9 years, and we will gladly continue to do so. But we strongly encourage the state to adopt this policy in order to extend this business, employee, and customer-friendly benefit to all. This is the right thing to do for all Minnesotans, and the benefits far outweigh the costs. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gere. Next up is Councillor Joel Cypress from the Duluth City Council. Councillor, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
My name is Joel Cypress, and I am a member of the Duluth City Council. And thank you, Representative Eklund, for having me here today. And I am also here to testify in support of statewide Earned Sick and Safe Time legislation. Other testifiers have and will share the benefits of such a policy for employers, employees, and also for public health. But I can share a particular perspective as someone who had the responsibility in Duluth to vote on the issue of whether to implement that policy at the local level. Duluth adopted its Earned Sick and Safe Time Ordinance in May of 2018, and it went into effect on January 1st of 2020. During the discussions of the Earned Safe and Sick Time proposal in Duluth, the issue was controversial, it was contentious, There was concern within the business community about the impact it might have. What was interesting is that once the policy was adopted and the ordinance was adopted in the city of Duluth, the controversy essentially vanished. Between May of 2018, when the ordinance was approved and went into effect in January of 2020, our city administration and city staff worked cooperatively with our local businesses for a smooth transition to implementing the policy. And then once the policy was in place, I, as a counselor, have heard little or no pushback or complaint from anyone, including our local business community. No calls for repeal, no complaints about its interference with our local businesses and employers' ability to operate. And that didn't surprise me. Before I committed to supporting a local earned sick and safe time ordinance, I took a look at the experiences of other cities that had done it. And one of the most in-depth studies was of the policy in Seattle, Washington. And one of the most interesting things I discovered was that after Seattle put into place its earned sick and safe time ordinance, support for the ordinance among employers went up significantly as employers discovered that some of their fears were not founded. And furthermore, before I voted in favor of our local earned sick and safe time ordinance, I reached out specifically to small business owners in a variety of sectors of our economy to have an in-depth discussion. And I was particularly interested to talk to small business owners who already had the policy in place. And what I learned was that it worked well for them. It helped them prosper. It helped them retain employees. And it didn't interfere with small businesses' ability to operate successfully. And what I took from that is that a well-thought-out, well-designed earned sick and safe time policy will actually, once in place, operate much more smoothly than those who raise concerns ahead of time may believe. So again, I would urge this be done statewide. Thank you.
Thank you, Counselor. Next up, we have Ed Stewart from Isaiah. Mr. Stewart, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Yes, good afternoon, committee. My name is Ed Stewart, and I'm a St. Paulite and Isaiah leader here to speak in favor of earned sick and safe time. My daughter is a hardworking Latina single mom and a St. Paulite too, and she has struggled nearly her entire working career to make ends meet while also being able to take care of her biracial daughter. Like any parent who is stretched financially, there's this constant nagging fear about whether you can take care of yourself and your kids when an urgent events happen. And as we know, these unexpected events do happen. 2 years ago, I testified before the Minnesota House Committee on this bill about a bitter cold snap that closed my granddaughter's daycare. And more recently, my daughter contracted COVID-19. Luckily, both times she had access to earned sick and safe time. So instead of worrying about losing her job or wages as she recovered, my daughter was able to nurse herself back to health through a very scary time. Having access to this benefit gave my daughter peace of mind. And for me as a father and grandfather, it was so comforting to know she could focus on her family. My daughter and thousands like her are why I worked so hard with Isaiah to pass earned sick and safe time in St. Paul. But why should St. Paul, Minnesota, Minneapolis, and Duluth be the only cities to offer workers this benefit when families across Minnesota right now are facing COVID-19? No one should get penalized for having to pick up their children from the daycare when it closes or when they get sick from a virus. We should be a state that's building a caring, family-friendly economy. Minnesotans should not struggle to work with dignity. It's time for our state legislators to act with courage needed to do what is right for all Minnesotans. It's time for us to pass earned sick and safe time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stewart. Next on the list of testifiers is Ava Lopez, SEIU Local 26. Ms. Lopez, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi, my name is Eva Lopez. I've been working for last 9 years in Target Richfield. I am vice president from Local 26, SEIU Local 26. And I don't speak really English, so my kids, my son is helping me with that.
Hello. Hi. You'd have to identify your son for the record as well, please.
His name is...
My name is Mauricio Barreto.
Welcome to the committee. Please proceed, Ms. Lopez.
Our union represents over 8,000 workers, including janitors, security officers, and airport workers. Many of our members have won paid sick days in our union contracts or by pushing the cities where we work to pass this law, but many don't have sick time if they are part-time workers. Janitors and security officers who don't have a union often have no sick time at all. For the first many years I did this work, I didn't have paid sick time. I didn't have basic time and still don't. Many of the fellow retail janitors who clean the big box stores don't have any paid sick time. We are mostly immigrants and people of color. Passing this law would help so many people. Right now, if people get sick, they either go to work sick or do not get paid. This is wrong, and no person should have to make that choice. It's been hard during COVID as we are afraid of getting the virus or bringing it home. Over 750 members of our union have had to miss work because of COVID, and 4 have died from COVID. When people miss work because they have COVID or were near someone with COVID, they have to either use paid sick time if they have it or go unpaid. If people had sick time, they'd be more comfortable making sure we are healthy and stay home. But even after COVID, we should all have sick time so we can care for ourselves and our families. When I feel sick, I often think that I better go to work. Most of the time, I just hope I don't get sick so I don't have to worry about that choice. I'm calling on you all to help us be safe during this pandemic and beyond by making sure every person in our state has had paid sick time so we all can be safe and healthy. Thank you.
Ms. Lopez, could you have your son identify himself a little bit slower? I didn't catch his name.
My name is Mauricio Barreto.
Okay, thank you, Mauricio, and thank you for your testimony. Next up is Lauren Schadhorst from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Ms. Schadhorst, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lauren Schadhorst, and I'm the Director of Workplace Management and Workforce Development Policy for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I appreciate the opportunity to share our concerns with House File 7. As you know, the Minnesota Chamber is a statewide organization representing more than 6,300 businesses and more than 500,000 employees throughout Minnesota. The majority of our members are small and mid-sized businesses. I'm also speaking today on behalf of the Minnesota Chamber Federation, a partnership with 43 local chambers representing over 21,000 local businesses. To reiterate the top message we submitted on behalf of our members in written testimony last week, Minnesota's economic recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic must be the top legislative priority for this session. Prior to the pandemic, we thought that global competition and increased mobility drove home the need for efficient tax and state-imposed operational costs in recent years. But now, with massive pandemic-driven changes to work roles and conditions, the state-driven tax and cost burdens matter all the more. Minnesota employers provide employees with innovative and robust and varied benefits, promoting wellness and flexibility, building high morale, and attracting and retaining the best talent in a competitive marketplace, while maintaining the ability to operate safely and manage a variety of workplaces across the state. Employers currently must also adhere to a strict set of labor laws and workplace standards at all levels of government in order to maintain safe, healthy, respectful, and inclusive workplaces. Within the current regulatory regime, employers must have the autonomy to make staffing decisions and provide wages, benefits, and schedules that are appropriate for their workplace and responsive to workplace needs. The paid sick and safe time provisions in House File 7 mandate that employers offer fully paid time off in a specific format for an expanded set of familial persons for an expanded list of qualifying events. The bill requires employers to maintain specific records in a specific format or risk significant fines and liabilities. All this for a type of benefit that two-thirds of Minnesota's workforce already has access to. This proposal is different than paid sick and safe time ordinances adopted in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth, further complicating compliance and increasing costs for businesses who operate in those locations, as these local ordinances are not preempted, creating a scenario where employers would still be required to comply with a patchwork of sick and safe time mandates within Minnesota. Cost compliance and operational impacts of mandates such as the one being considered today put pressure on employers, especially small employers. Increased costs further limit the resources available for employee compensation, job growth, and expansion in Minnesota. In a time of economic recovery, the Chamber supports a do-no-harm approach that limits additional cost burdens and mandates on employers who are doing their best to keep their doors open and Minnesotans employed. Now is not the time to add to this burden. We appreciate the opportunity to share our opposition to House File 7 with the committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Schotthorst. Next up, we have Devin Helmick. Mr. Helmick, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Greetings, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Devin Helmick. I'm here to show my support for passing Earned Sick and Safe Time. I worked in a bakery in St. Cloud for a major retail chain for a while. While working with food, you're not supposed to be sick. However, this chain punished you for taking days off due to illness, and we had no paid sick time available. I know several coworkers who had gone to work sick because they couldn't sustain the loss of income. However, I cannot blame my coworkers. We were all strapped for cash and facing cuts to our hours. This was and is bad for everyone involved. Our families and our communities are not healthy when we cannot take time off for our health. Within that major retail chain, I faced discipline for missing too many days off due to illness and dangerous weather. These choices by big retail companies made myself, our customers, and my coworkers more in danger. Choices that big businesses make continue to harm our communities. We all need affordable, accessible health care and policies that support us using our health care. I shouldn't have to choose between care I need and losing income, or worse, losing my job. Neither should anyone else, especially during this pandemic. Because of the pandemic, I had to move out of St. Cloud and now find myself working in Hutchinson, still without earned sick and safe time. After hearing my story, I'm asking you each to support sick and safe time so that people like myself are able to safely access our health care without being at risk of losing our livelihoods.
Thank you, Mr. Helmick. Next up is Mike Hickey, National Federation of Independent Business. Mr. Hickey, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello, Mr. Chairman. Am I coming through?
Yeah, we can hear you. I can anyway.
Good. Trying to avoid a botched Zoom experience here, so thanks. Congratulations on your chairmanship. I'm with the National Federation of Independent Business, and as many of you know, we are the state's major small business group with over 9,000 members. We're strongly opposed.
Could you state your name, please, for the record?
I'm sorry.
That's right.
That's the group's name, but not my name. Mike Hickey with National Federation of Independent Business.
Please proceed. Sorry about that.
Oh, no, pardon me. I should have the drill down by now. Our members are really opposed philosophically and practically to these type of mandates, and more are obviously coming this year. We feel people, especially people who are trying to launch a new entrepreneurial experience or adventure, need not to be micromanaged by the state of Minnesota. And the longer we make that list, the harder it's going to be. As an entrepreneur sits down with maybe a colleague, an employee or two, as they're trying to launch something, and we've had tremendous experiences in this state and across this country, coming out of garages, coming out of basements, some of them I know personally of, they can't be worried about a list of mandates that they have to comply with the next day. We're not even sure the fledgling venture will be around a year from the day they're starting it, or even sooner. And these type of mandates really deter people. Often they go, this risk is tremendous. I just don't know if I could also add paid sick leave, what we're talking about today, coming on another day, a new tax and paid family leave, higher minimum wage, and a host of other things that that could be coming at them. As you know, the small business sector is a dynamic one, but also has very high failure rates. SBA has estimated that 30% of all small businesses fail in the first 2 years, and also that two-thirds fail in the first 10 years. Another estimate was 50% fail in the first year. So we're all aware of seeing some small business venture start in our community. You're pulling for it. You've gone in and given it some business, and some nights you're driving by, and the lights are out, and you go, I wonder, is that it? Are they done? Finally, there is no exemption to this legislation. And of the 13 states we could find through an NCSL check, 7 had some sort of an exemption to help out the smallest businesses that I've been referring to, and some were as large as 50 employees, which is not a real small business. So it shows you the sensitivity and the concern that some states have had for putting new mandates such as this on businesses, and urge you to consider all that. Consider what you're doing to the small business climate as you start to consider a whole host of mandates this year, and I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Mr. Hickey. Next up is Councillor Nelsie Yang from the St. Paul City Council. Councillor, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hey everyone, I'm Nelsie. Gender pronouns are she and her. I'm a council member in St. Paul. When I got elected in 2019, I became the youngest woman to be a council member in St. Paul. And so it's really an honor to be here with you all. I'm here to testify in support of statewide Earn Sick and Safe Time. To me, this is really, really personal. When we're talking about folks in our communities who need Earn Sick and Safe Time and who don't have it, like, I can attest to what it felt like having Hmong refugee parents who worked not having that. And so I have really vivid memories of going to school, elementary school, and seeing my parents just like exhaust all their options on who would be able to pick us up if we were sick, or even if that was even an option. So sometimes we would have to walk to a home from school. And so I think that, you know, for me, like, one of the reasons why being here is so important is because it's so important for us to push and pass policies that are humanizing. At the end of the day, we are all humans. We need to be able to care for our bodies, care for ourselves, care for other people. And the things that we're talking about, which are things that are like things that can't always be planned for, right? I'm talking about recovering from the flu. I'm talking about getting a COVID-19 test to this day, caring for your children when there's an unexpected school closure, going to a medical appointment. Sometimes these are things that you can't actually even plan for. And so if anyone has never had an experience where you had to choose between doing that or staying at the workplace, then my gosh, I'm so happy for you, because no one should have to choose between those options. But for many of the people who I represent, who you represent, like, there are folks who are going through this every single day. And it's so important for us to use our position as people who are decision makers to be able to take care of those folks who are left out of our system and most marginalized. And those folks are, many of them, Black and Indigenous people, people of color, and many are who are working families as well. And so this is so extremely important. Even though we have it passed in St. Paul, like, there are folks who I represent who work outside of St. Paul who might not have it. And for many of you, you know, your constituents are also not having it as well. But the most important thing is being able to take care of ourselves, being able to take care of the people that we love. Like, that is priceless when you are able to do that. And so when we think about monetary value, what we can actually gain from having a statewide policy like that, we gain so much more. We gain being able to build more stable, healthy families. And we know that that's actually what creates super strong communities. And so I urge you to support this statewide Earn Sick and Safe Time and really push for humanizing policies.
Thank you, Councillor. Next up is Reverend Javen Swanson from Gloria Day Lutheran Church. Reverend, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair and representatives, my name is Javen Swanson. I'm one of the pastors at Gloria Day Lutheran Church in St. Paul, and I'm also a clergy leader with Isaiah. Near the end of Matthew's gospel, Jesus tells a parable, and it ends with people asking, Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? That we saw you a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? That we saw you sick or in prison and visited you? And the king will answer them, truly I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me. House File 7 is about protecting those whom Jesus called the least of these. I want to tell you about Tony, who is a member of my church who works contract jobs in IT. One night a couple years ago, he was making supper and he accidentally sliced off the tip of his finger. He went to the ER and came home later that night with stitches. The next day at work, he tried to tough it out, but hours of typing was too much. He said he was actually bleeding through his bandage onto his keyboard. His boss told him, yes, he could go home, but it would be unpaid time and he'd receive demerits. This is just wrong. The congregation I serve takes seriously Jesus' call to care for the least of these among us. A few years ago, we organized to help pass a citywide sick and safe time ordinance in St. Paul, the strongest ordinance of its kind in the country, which benefits 72,000 of our city's lowest income workers, 72,000 people who previously did not have access to earned sick and safe time. After that, we began hearing from some who decried a patchwork of regulations, and they said that one state, one rule should be the policy. On that point, we actually agree, especially in this time of pandemic when staying home when we're sick is the most basic action we can take to protect one another. Let's pass one rule that protects all Minnesotans. Let's follow St. Paul's lead and Minneapolis and Duluth and pass the strongest statewide sick and safe time law in the country and set the bar high for other states. Don't just do it because it's good policy. Do it because we have an obligation to protect the least of these. Do it because it's the right and moral thing to do. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Reverend. That's it for our testifiers now. So members, we will now move on to questions. Please use the raise hand function for any member questions. Okay, I'm not sure if I saw Representative Bliss or Raleigh first, but I'll go alphabetical by last names. Representative Bliss, go ahead.
Thank you. I don't mean to have the no on my face. I apologize for that. I clicked the wrong button.
We're all learning technology, Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Olson, you made a statement that this bill will allow mom and pops to compete with the box stores. Are they not allowed to provide this on their own like the other testifiers have shown us? And if so, how does this bill improve their competitiveness with the big box stores?
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Bliss. I think the point of that being that this now is going to level the playing field for what's available for if you're an employee of a big box realtor or a big box employer or a small one. It allows to be able to compete with it. I mean, it's really hard if you're a small business trying to compete to get employees to work for you, that you now have this benefit that can really bring people in. And I think we've heard really clearly from our testifiers that our small businesses, what a benefit it is to their employees, the retention, the presenteeism, just all of the things that would, ensure that small businesses have this benefit no matter what corner of the state you're in.
Representative Bliss,
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so if they already have the ability to do it right now, that is there already. But if you're requiring them to do it, in my own situation, I started a business 21 years ago now. The first 9 years of that business, I had up to three employees. The first 9 years of that business, I had no income from that business, none. I had to take a second job to pay for it. It was a capital intensive business and I had to build it up. I could probably right now afford to do this, but in the first 9 years, I was not able to afford to do this. How is that going to allow me to compete with the big chains? If I can't afford it, you're putting a mandate on small businesses that especially right now in a pandemic, that a lot of them just can't afford. I know a lot of small business owners that have really struggled, and they work. They care for their employees. They've made car payments for their employees. They've made rent payments for their employees. And these are good people. And I know a lot of there's a lot of, you know, jabs at small business owners that don't offer this. But most of the small business owners I know really do care for their people. So as a small business owner like I was, where I couldn't afford to do this for 9 years, how does that help me compete with the big box stores?
Representative Olson.
Yeah, Representative Bliss, thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand your question. I think what I would flip it to say right now, it's really hard to be a small employer and compete with the big box stores if they're not requiring it. But so now what we're saying is if you're a large employer, you have to require it. And so that makes it easier for small businesses to compete right now. If you're a large employer and you're not offering it, it sure as heck, you're right. It makes it harder for small businesses. And, you know, overall, the cost of this benefit, I think the Department of Labor and Industry said, you know, the cost of offering this benefit when they did a survey was like 0.75% of the total, you know, expenditures on employees. So, you know, in terms of that, and so when we're requiring the large employers to do it that maybe aren't doing it, it levels the playing field. So then the small businesses can also provide it as well.
Representative Bliss.
But I guess my point is that the small employers now can offer it already. I think this bill is just putting an unfunded mandate on small businesses that we really don't need coming off of a pandemic like this. That's all I have, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bliss. Next up is Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am a small business owner. I do employ people. About 18, 19 years ago, I started my company. And in the first 3 years, I had to work at least two other jobs outside of my regular job. And 100% of that money went to pay my employees. I did that because I believed in my company. I believed in the vision. And I was 100% all in every single day. What I gained from that experience personally was that in a free market, why not allow the market to offer the best approach? Why do we have to mandate this by law? Because as in my reading of the law, it sets up that the hardworking employer may be fined up to $10,000 for not personally delivering required reports to the commissioner if requested. I'd refer you to line 10.23 through 10.26. So the two questions that I've got is, why do we have to have a mandate? And then secondly, what's the look back period for an employer? So, and actually there's probably a third in here. If a business fails, as many of them do in the first 2 years, how long of a look back period is there? And a lot of these businesses that fail, by the way, don't create the corporate veils of utilizing a lawyer and fully incorporating. You know, these are people that start up a lawn service. They want to shovel snow. They want to do, you know, the types of businesses that, you know, flourish here in Minnesota because we've got a great entrepreneurial spirit. The other side of it is, and then my last part of the question is, do you feel that as we put more and more mandates on hardworking employers, do you feel that this law and others like it are going to facilitate a move to more automation, meaning that some of these restaurants are going to implement kiosk systems as opposed to hardworking restaurant employees? And won't that decrease the number of employees and those that are on payrolls, Mr. Chair?
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Raleigh. So I heard a couple of things there, and I'll just respond that the free market is already leaving about 36% of Minnesotans behind, and that's what this bill is talking about. The people, as we heard today, that can least survive being left behind are being left behind. So we really need to do that. We're talking about a pretty substantial number of Minnesotans that are already left behind. Regarding the record keeping and timelines, this is really in line with other state requirements that businesses have to abide by. And so, in terms of that, it's not meant to be more onerous or any of that sort. It's something business owners are already doing. And as we've heard from our testifiers in other cities and places where it's been implemented, it's been working for them to do that. And, and I think what also I would say is that, the trivial costs to this really don't incentivize automation. Because again, I mentioned just the trivial cost of providing this benefit, according to all the labor surveys, would not incentivize a move away, but would actually incentivize investing in workers, again, as we heard our small businesses testifiers talk about already today.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What is the look back period for a business that fails and is no longer in business?
Representative Olson, and I do, we do have people from the department that could answer if Representative Olson does not have that one. Representative Olson.
Yeah, Chair Eklund, I was going to suggest that. So there is the Department of Labor and Industry who can certainly answer that. There will also be some things related that will also be taking care of rulemaking. So I don't know if the department did want to respond to that.
Somebody from the department, if they could weigh in, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Yes, Chair and members of the committee, this is Nicole Blissenbach, Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Labor and Industry. So in general, our record-keeping requirements have a three-year look-back period. Records are required to be kept for 3 years.
Representative Raleigh.
So with a three-year look-back period, and Mr. Chair, if I may ask a general question, and you can direct it where you wish to go. If an entrepreneur starts up a company, they are in business for a year. They fail due to market conditions or the sun was not shining on Thursday. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of reasons why businesses fail. Are you saying that there can be up to a $10,000 penalty or fee that is enforceable by law that can be mandated by the commissioner where the employer who shut down their company 2.5 years previously must, if required by the commissioner, appear before the commissioner in person, and if they don't, it's a $10,000 fine or fee or penalty, according to lines 10.23 through 10.26, please, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Blissenbach.
Chair Eklund and members of the committee, the question as to the penalties, I believe the specific reference has to do with record-keeping penalties. That would track the current record-keeping requirements that we have for payroll data, policies, things like that. So it would track that, and the penalties apply to those similar records that are required to be kept for 3 years. They are required to be kept while for the time period that employees are employed. And then the look back period, like I said, is 3 years. I'm not sure what the further question is.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It sounds like I need to read this. 10.23, the commissioner may require the records to be submitted by certified mail delivery or, if necessary, by personal delivery by the employer or a representative of the employer as authorized by the employer in writing, and the commissioner may fine the employer up to $10,000 for each failure to submit or deliver records as required by this section. And then it goes on, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Blissenbach.
And yes, that is, Chair Eklund, members of the committee. Yes, that's an accurate reading. This is the current record-keeping requirement. What this does is add these additional records that an employer must keep to comply with this bill's requirements. It adds it to the current record-keeping and the penalty for current record-keeping violations.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This does not sound like a trivial fee to me of $10,000 per incident, and these unfunded mandates are not something that I can support, and I would urge a no vote on this.
Representative, Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Olson. Does House File 7, does it cover an employee with multiple jobs? Let's say I had a job at one location, and I had another job and another job to pay my bills. Does this, which employer would be responsible to, in terms of the policies of ESS?
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Detmer, yes. So it would be required of whatever, it's your employer in the if you're working and employed in Minnesota, that's what we're talking about. So you would accrue with each employer.
Representative Detmer.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Olson, so would it be the employer that I have the most time with, or which employer would be responsible?
Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, so it's an accrual rate based on hours work that's spelled out in the legislation. So, you know, obviously if you're working more with one employer, you're going to be accruing faster than if your job has less hours with another employer. So so that's, you're accruing there. And then when you use it, if you're missing at one job, that's the job you have to use from your bank to do it. So it's, you know, it's tied to the, your hours you accrue are tied to the hours you use with that employer.
Representative Detmer.
And Mr. Chair, and Representative Olson, does House File 7 specify how many employees in your company, if you own a company and you say you have 50 employees, does it specify how many can use the ESS policy at the same time?
Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, so there is, if you look into the bill language, there is the eligible use, and it has some of the language spelled out about the notices with employers, and so there is some requirements in terms of notice and whatnot between the employer and employer, but it's not spelled out specifically. And I think the broader point here, especially with the pandemic, you can't control who is sick when. That would be really difficult for an employer to manage. That's part of what we're talking about, is things come up and you get sick, and those are the folks that need to be staying home and taking care of themselves or taking care of a sick kiddo. And so that's really what this is about.
Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chair, and you know, you don't have to have a pandemic to have people that are sick, but I do have a question for Mr. Joel Cypress from Duluth.
Proceed with the question. Mr. Councilor Cypress is here.
Okay. Mr. Chair, and I see Duluth has got their own policy. How long did it take for the city of Duluth to establish this policy? I know you had some problems at first, but how long did it take the city of Duluth to come up with their own policy for ESS?
Councilor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Detmer. If my memory serves me, we spent approximately a year and a half, I would imagine, in research and deliberations. Our city council established a task force to study the issue that spent about a year, and then we spent a number of months after the report from that task force until the time that we adopted the ordinance. And then we timed it so that it was about a year and a half between the adoption of the ordinance and the date that it went into effect. One thing I would say is that one reason it perhaps took us quite a while is that, unlike the state of Minnesota, we lack the expertise of the administrative departments that we could rely upon to address a lot of the technical issues. So there's a lot of learning we had to do as counselors to understand the technical parts of this issue so that we could develop a good, well-thought-out policy.
Representative Detmer.
And Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Cypress. So we have an example here of a municipality looking at the situation with the small businesses and the large businesses. They were able to work it out and bring the information to the public where the public had an input to put together an ordinance that House File 7 is projecting. Would the council member from the city of St. Paul, please, I have a question for you.
If you see, Councillor Yang is here.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And has the city of St. Paul been considering coming forward with the policy, ESS policy? And let's say if the state does not go forward with this, would the city of St. Paul think about working with the people of St. Paul and the businesses to come up with a policy like this?
Councilor Yang.
Mr. Chair, I think the councilor from St. Paul actually left the meeting.
All right. I apologize, Representative Detmer. I thought Councilor Yang was on here. It's kind of hard keeping track of the number of people that are, so I guess we'll have to get that question to the city council and see what their answer would be. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think we have some good examples of municipalities seeing the need maybe for this, and they've been able to work through their city councils. And without the state coming in with a mandate, I really feel that's the way to go, that whether it's a county or a city, you know, smaller, a lot of these things can be handled at the grassroots level. And as soon as you get the state involved in something like this, you can have some problems across the board. So I would recommend that cities and municipalities really look at this and come up with programs for their area. And I think that's the way to go instead of having a statewide mandate. Thank you.
Next up is Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to all the testifiers who brought your stories into this space. I think that really listening to you is the way we're going to make the best policy. Representative Olson, I'm wondering, I was struck by the percentage, 36% of Minnesotans who don't have access to this right now. And if you could tell us a little bit about who those folks are, what kind of jobs and industries they're working on, who are the Minnesotans who are having to make the choice between getting sick and taking the time they need and potentially giving up a paycheck.
Representative Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Greenman, for the question. Yeah, so I mentioned that it's 36% of employers in Minnesota, but then the contrast gets really stark when you talk about who it is. That two-thirds of workers in categories, whether you're Hispanic, that you work in the service industry, or you're one of the lowest wage workers, so the bottom, you know, the bottom rung, those folks, two out of three, do not have access to this benefit. So we're talking disproportionately about people of color, people in low-wage jobs, people in the service industry. And I think I mentioned it in the beginning of my testimony, but it's often the people on the other side of the sneeze guard. And I think, you know, it really shows the people that are at the front lines, as we heard from our testifiers, that really interact with the public, that interact with our food, that take care of our vulnerable, that kind of thing.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, what strikes me is that this will be, I think, the third day of hearings that we have had from workers, from service workers and essential workers, many. And I think that there's a lot of overlap of workers who have been, you know, just asking when jobs come back, that they can have access to their job coming back, that when they have to take off time to quarantine in this pandemic, that they're given the pay that they deserve. And now here, when we're talking about something as fundamental as a paid or earning sick time, and I just sort of, as we think about the testifiers and as we think about all of these stories, I think that there's a lot of connections to that, those set of folks that you're talking about, those Minnesotans who are at the lowest wage, who have the least protections. And so as I think folks are talking about, why can't we do this just locally and why won't businesses do this? I think we really need to think about the workers that have the least amount of power and that have where we, I think, as a state really need to do better by workers.
So I really appreciate it, and I just wanted to make that observation. I think we've been hearing a lot of testimony from Minnesotans who are asking for help. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Olson?
I agree, Representative Freeman.
Okay, next up we have Representative Berg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I want to acknowledge Representative Raleigh and Representative Bliss. And I'm thankful that you seem to be business owners that care about and take care of your employees. I think that's important to talk about and to draw into the light that part of the conversation. But I also want to recognize that there are far too many employers out there that are not good actors, that do not take care of their employees, where it is not their values to cut into, for example, their profit margin to do the right thing. I work in the airline industry. There's, you know, if I'm sick or if one of my children is sick, it's not like I can just take my laptop home with me and continue to work. Flights get canceled, delays are made, and there's a bit of a fear culture around that in the airline industry, understandably. I'm grateful for a union that provides a collective bargaining contract that builds in some of this type of sick time. I'm also a part-time flight attendant, so I accrue sick time at a drip rate. And, you know, none of that was a problem when I was married and part of a two-parent household. When I became a one-parent household, I lost some of that. And so I think we need to talk about and think about those sorts of dynamics with workers. As well as, you know, I work three jobs. When two of my three jobs ended and I could only rely on one job, being sick or having a child that was sick was just something that was unavoidable. I had to work through anyway. And then as my kids are now entering the workforce as young men, I've taught them certain types of employers to avoid, right? Because I've taught them to sort of value working for employers that are going to have these types of built-in safety nets for workers. So I applaud Representative Olson's work on this. I think that even with union contracts, even with good actors that are small business owners, that we need to have something with teeth in it to protect Minnesotans. And I think in addition, something like that this is going to draw people to those small businesses when they see these values reflected. So I just want to put those values out there and speak highly about this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions or comments from the committee? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Say, Representative Olson, I'm just curious as to why you chose the that first fine of $10,000. You know, the good book says that we should forgive and give people a second chance. But in your bill, first offense is a $10,000 fine, which is quite steep. I think we all can agree on that, no matter if you're a big box or especially a small family mom-and-pop business. Seems quite onerous for a first-time offense, especially when it is so in-depth and very detailed. Mistakes can happen. Human error can take place. It can be an administrative nightmare, if you will, for small businesses. And why did you choose such a hefty fine? Talk about a slap in the face in this economy.
Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative McDonald, for the question, and I'm glad to provide some clarification. It is up to a $10,000 fine, and it gives flexibility to the Department of Labor and Industry on that. So it is not an immediate $10,000 fine.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, and is Representative Olson, is that, do you know the up to? I mean, I do that in my business, you know, up to a certain amount of hours or a certain amount of money. What is the minimum, and is it a first offense, or does it change with a second offense or third offense? Just some of the details, because there's no doubt that error can happen, and maybe even human error, or maybe just a neglect, which is, you know, maybe rightfully so. But, you know, what's the minimum, if you would think, would be the penalty?
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald. I can certainly ask, Department of Labor and Industry to talk a little bit more about the flexibility, but, you know, that they offer. I don't think the intention is to immediately punish someone for record keeping something they can work with them on, but the spirit is to really incentivize businesses to provide this benefit is really what it's about, that we don't want to get into the fining area, but it's there if we need it to have that tool. But really, it's a way to just disincentivize, you know, not doing the right thing, basically. So we want people to do the right thing, and that fine there with the flexibility that Dolly will have, as well as the up to language, really, we hope that we don't have that happening.
Representative McDonald, after we move this bill out of committee, at one point there, at the point where we do, a lot of these questions will be hashed out in judiciary, because they're the ones that have the purview over this. Representative McDonald.
Chair, thank you, Rep. Olson. Yeah, I believe what you were saying there, but let me tell you about Dolly. We have local businesses here in town that got a call from Dolly, who after 10 o'clock, they had people around the bar, and they threatened them with a fine without any, you know, recourse. And the fact of the matter is, they were employees. So Dolly has been going around during this pandemic and fining without even an explanation some of these businesses that have been put out of business and are shut down. So with all due respect, I'm very hesitant about Dolly's spirit of the law or spirit of cooperation with businesses when it's been evident in the state of Minnesota that their first response is to slap them with a fine without even due process. So I think as an author of the bill, I would recommend in my experience here in 10 years that you put very bold and strong language that puts in the law, spirit of the law, that they don't just fundamentally come out and fine people and not investigate further of a mistake. Does that make sense, Representative Olson?
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald. I hear your feedback.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Chair and Representative Olson. Thank you. I just hope that you, and I've done this too before. I've had my fellow friends on the other side of the aisle give me suggestions on bills that they think would make it stronger, and I've taken to those and incorporated that and made it a better bill. So I hope that you are sincere in that. I think you are. I know you would be a very sincere and respectful person, so I hope you take that to heart. But another question, Mr. Chair, to Representative Olson.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Olson, if in your bill, does it exempt Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth, since they're already doing this?
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Chair Eklund. Representative McDonald, we have the minimum requirements, and as so long as, you know, whether you're in Minneapolis, St. Paul, currently have the ordinance in those cities, that as long as it follows the guidelines for what we have laid out as the minimum, this is a bill about being the floor. The ceiling could be much higher. And so as long as businesses are meeting the floor, they can do as much and more as they would like on that.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Olson, that's the problem. The floor is the floor, but the sky is the limit. If the ceiling is high as ever, then we need to be careful as to what you're putting in the language there. And I'm wondering why Dolly isn't on the call with us in this meeting. They play a very big part of your bill that will affect many, many people. And certainly our businesses who are struggling immensely during this time, yet another mandate when two-thirds of the businesses are doing this. So the sky's the limit when I read this language of the bill. Why isn't Dolly a part of this discussion?
Representative McDonald, Dolly has been part of the, Ms. Blissenbach has been here answering questions as need be when we've referred to her. She is on there. We do have representation. Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, my sincere apologies then. You know, Zooming, you don't always get to hear every word with the broadband out here in rural Minnesota. So my apologies if I came across curt on that. Duly noted. One last question, Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald.
Representative Olson, the family farm, I have a lot of farms out in my district, family farms, and they're set up to, I suppose, some of their family members are employees. Is your bill, does that include the family farm? Because on the family farm, you don't get sick. You work. Those cows need milking. The hay needs chopping. And the pigs need the feeding. I'm afraid that this could be detrimental to the family farm. What say you?
Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, I guess I would need like arm work. I mean, if you're an employer, a large, you know, an employer that meets the standards, you would provide the benefit. But if you're a family doing the work, your family doing the work. I guess I didn't quite catch if you mean in a farm operation or, a, you know, so. But yes, if you're an employer in the state of Minnesota that, you know, meets, you have to provide this benefit for everybody.
Representative McDonald.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. All right. Well, thank you, Representative Olson. I will continue to read your bill and pray upon it. And but it just does seem heavily weighted against the family businesses in general during this tough, difficult time. I've been self-employed for 33 years. When you're sick, yeah, sometimes you just got to call in sick and you don't get a paycheck. That stinks sometimes. That's life. But most of our employees take good care of their employees. And I don't think it needs to be mandated by the state, even if one company has one employee. So I just would be careful what you put into law if we want to keep businesses here in Minnesota.
Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to take the opportunity to thank all the presenters here. From the stories of a worker who had the tip of their finger kind of cut off and then still had to go to work the next day and was bleeding all over the keyboard, to the parent that has to choose between taking care of a sick child or going to work, or I think of the people in food service who I, as a patron, want the people who are bringing the food, taking the order, doing the work to be able to take care of themselves. So I want to thank everyone that was here, and I encourage everyone to support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Frederick. Representative Berg.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to comment that I'm really encouraged to hear about all the businesses that are taking care of their employees. In the world that I work in as a union organizer and community organizer, I tend to see a lot of Minnesotans and a lot of workers that need legislation just like this. And so I'm really glad that there are others that live in spaces where this doesn't seem important. And I would love it if you know, if we're going to pray on this bill, if we could also pray for the workers. Thank you.
Any other member comments? I do have a couple. Number one, I was part of that 25 to 30% when I retired from the company that I worked at. And I'm not complaining about the company I worked at. It was a very fine company. It provided my wife and family and I a good living, good benefits throughout the years. But I've got a little story to tell about that company. We worked 12-hour shifts, and we worked what was called on Monday through Thursday, hell week, and then we got a week off, and we called that sick week, because in the wintertime, the people that we worked with, that we spent more time with than our families, brought every kind of creep and crud that they had because they could not afford to call in and take a day off when they're providing for their families. I heard this throughout most of these testifiers, that we want healthy employees. Absolutely, we want healthy employees. This is what this bill is looking for. And I heard a comment about automation. Automation is happening, folks. That same place that I worked when I got hired at the paper mill in 1989, there was 1,400 employees. 29 years later, we had one curtailment that cost $235. That was a market-related curtailment. When I retired, there was 535 employees, and that's all due to automation. So that's automation is a good line to use, but it's a fact of life, and it's happening because business is going to do whatever they can to automate and have less employees out there. Members, the reason this bill is being laid over is because we did not receive a fiscal note on it. So it's being laid over till we get the fiscal note. When that comes, we'll be moving it out of committee. I fully expect that we are not going to revet this bill when we get the fiscal note. We will have Representative Olson come back and discuss the specifics, and then we'll move it on. It has many stops to make before it gets done with through the legislative process. Representative Olson, would you have any closing comments before the bill is laid over?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for the discussion. I just close by saying, no matter where you live, your job, or the color of your skin, through our differences, we want really many of the same things: to snuggle our kids when they're sick, to make them feel better, to see the doctor before our illness goes from bad to worse. and being able to recover from the flu without worrying about missing bills or losing our jobs. So House File 7 is about moving towards the kind of caring state we all want Minnesota to be, one that reflects the compassion Minnesotans have for our family, friends, and neighbors. And with that, I thank you and I appreciate the discussion today.
Thank you, Representative Olson. The bill is laid over. Members and staff, our next meeting is February 3rd, 2021. We will be getting department overviews from, I believe, the Veterans, Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and the Military Services. So we look forward to that. And with that, any other questions? Thank you, members. We are adjourned.